Donald Trump is going to be the Republican candidate, and it's going to be the biggest year since 1964 for Democrats in Utah. This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
What's more important to Jim DeBacchus? Senator Mike Lee or the new Dixie State Trailblazers? Stay tuned.
I take Jim on the minimum wage. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. But first, this news. Good morning, I'm Natalie Gochner, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center, and on the political right, Representative Dan McKay.
Good morning, everyone.
And on the political left, Senator Jim DeBacchus.
Hi, everybody.
And I'm in the center, but I don't sit in the center, you guys. You guys always sit together, and I'm over on the side, which feels really familiar to me.
We have our... Stop it.
Well, I'm thinking of this. I hate to do this when Ross Chambliss is not in town, but there is a political book by Eric Hoffer called The History of Mass Movements, and he chronicles extreme positions, whether it's the, you know, I don't know, Ku Klux Klan or whatever you want to say. And he says that people on the left and the right have more in common with each other than they do with people in the political center.
Really?
Think about it. Because what makes you extreme is a personality trait, not an ideology. So I'm bringing that up because you guys sit by each other because you're chummy because you're like each other. And I'm the big outlier here.
Well, I will say this. Is this okay? I was listening to a Broadway I was listening to a Broadway tune the other day, and a certain Utah senator who's openly gay asked me if I was sure that I wasn't gay.
Oh, yeah.
Look, he's humming along to a Broadway tune, and he's got this expensive suit with just the right tie.
He has beautiful white teeth.
Perfectly manicured hair and white
beautiful
teeth.
Straight
Give me a
teeth.
Break. I'm not buying this.
It reminds me, well, I mean, the listeners will probably enjoy this, I guess. But one time, Jim and I were in a photo after doing a TV shoot, and I was in a suit, one of my suits. And Jim wasn't as dapperly dressed.
Frumpy
that
is what I am. Frumpy.
So somebody's put on social media. They took the picture and put it out there and said, "Which one of these guys is gay?"
Oh, I love it.
Which I thought was really funny.
Exactly.
I love
anyway,
it.
Anyway, sorry.
Well, anyway, I think you guys are great in the chemistry and collegiality you have with one another, and I think it's because you both are extremists, and so you get along well.
It's because we're both on the same tax.
Yeah, that's it. That's
yeah,
it.
That does it. Hey, let's just take a minute on this program. We always talk about current events and things, but let's talk about kind of let's take a step back and talk about what is really happening in Utah right now. And I bring that up because this week is the Governor's Economic Summit. And, you know, there'll be 1,400 people at the Grand America talking about the Utah economy, entrepreneurship, innovation. And I was looking at economic data yesterday. We are in year number 5 of very strong growth in this state. Strong, strong growth. Yeah. I mean, and it's neat when you have 2 years. It's wonderful when you have 3, 4, 5. And the interesting thing is we're going to have 6. Because this is a good year we're in right now.
Yeah.
We're not seeing anything that's scaring us. We have very low unemployment. We have high job growth. We have strong retail sales. We have strong construction permitting going on. A lot of new companies expressing interest in our state. Dan, what does it mean?
I think you saw, you see a sustained economic growth in the state of Utah for lots of reasons. Mm-hmm. During the downturn, we did not suffer as much during the downturn here in Utah. I mean, I know there were many in Utah who did suffer. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to diminish that.
Mm-hmm. We were no Nevada.
But we were no Nevada. Mm-hmm. We did not see the trough the way everyone else did. And as a result, we were in a better position to continue or to pick up the growth cycle where we kind of left off, mm-hmm. as opposed to many of those others who were just trying to dig out in the very beginning.
Jim, some would say that we have great leadership in the state that's helped us to have this strong, prosperous several years.
I would just say,
look at his face.
If this is
he knew I was going there.
6 years of as good as it gets. 6 years, as the governor would say, of leading the nation, 6 years of creating it all. And look where we are. Look where our priorities are. Every corporation in the state, particularly multinationals, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars out to them. But where are we in education?
We put $1.8 billion
where
new money into education.
Where are we in education?
$1.8 billion.
51st. 51st, after putting $1.5 billion at the end of 5 years of the As Good As It Grows, Where are we on our poor people?
Yeah.
You know, we're, this is a great party, particularly for the one percenters. Oh, my goodness. This is like, woo, woo, woo. But for hardworking Utahns who are working on minimum wage, they haven't seen this party. Their living standard hasn't gone up. We need to begin looking at the other 90% and the middle class in the state of Utah and let the party go to them and not just to an elite group. And that starts with things like a $15 minimum wage.
Oh, boy.
Which only make, Natalie, it only makes up.
I'm going to write about that one.
It only makes up 6 or 7% of our total wages. It would have such a small effect on the general population, but to those people's lives, they could actually have a life.
Yeah. Let's talk about it, but I want to mention this. One thing I do really agree with you on, I had an interesting family party. You always learn a lot at family parties. My brother, who's been a professional educator his entire life, made the comment that we were talking about the whole presidential election, the Trump phenomenon, and he said, it's a failure of public education, Natalie. It's a failure of public education in this country. And what he was referring to is the biggest argument for public education is to have an educated citizenry, and he's seen a citizenry that he thinks is run afoul. I thought you'd like that.
I think it's true.
Yeah. Dan, where do you come down on that?
But nothing we would do would change that. I mean, the problem is we have a public education system that is educating to the middle. Or, sorry, I won't even say to the middle. They're agnostic as far as their approach and how they look at several issues. They're not necessarily core to American. They're not teaching, like, American principles or American constitutional thinking. What we're generally teaching is a history of events. And even then, that history of events is so glossed over that rarely do we accurately cover history. So it's because we're trying to whitewash, for the most part, our history so that it is politically correct. I will just say that many, many people do not understand the political history of the country. And there is several on both the far right and on the far left whose extreme positions, and in the middle for that matter, do not reflect accurately the instances of history that they quote as being the most important elements of their political
ideology.
I'm
not talking about political ideology. I'm talking about the basic education structure of our state. We have a phony system. And Education First and all of these do-gooder groups, these moderate Republicans in particular that have power and have influence, they refuse to look in the eye what the serious problem is, which is we have a governance system for education that doesn't work. We have this.
So Jim, the big question is, you got a governor's race going on right now. Why is education governance not an issue that's being talked about, that people are... I mean, you know, you're pointing the finger at the Republicans, but is Mike Weinholz taking on education governance? Are people learning about it?
He's going to be taking that on. I know
he knows.
I mean, it's so mundane and it's so boring, but we've got this creepy old state school board that's supposed to be running it. They're dysfunctional. They don't know what they're doing.
Everybody thinks the governor has power in education. The governor
doesn't.
Zero power in education.
And so we're 51st because we're not committing the money, but also because the money that does get thrown in, the legislature is in making all these preposterous laws about getting into classrooms. We need a strong vision about how our education system should go.
Wouldn't you love to see what Mitt Romney could do to our education system?
You know what? I would rather have Mitt Romney doing it than this muddled, muckety-muck we've got now.
Say that.
At least put somebody in charge. And you know what? Mitt, if after 4 years it ain't going well, you're back to holiday.
Oh, you're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm joined by Representative Dan McKay and Senator Jim DeBacchus. In our next segment, let's talk about the veto override, Dan. Want to hear an update from you on that. And we'll get into the Paul Ryan news.
This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
And Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the political center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. We have a lot of fun on this show. We also want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment or a topic that you'd like to hear us debate on this program, send us an email, comments@kcpw.org. Jim, I can't let you go. I want to go to the veto override, but I just can't let you go on this minimum wage thing without taking you on just a little bit.
Nice.
Okay, you know, so $7.25 an hour is the minimum wage.
I feel a supply-demand curve.
We peg it to the national rate. I want to just say to you that labor is a commodity, just like anything else. If you raise the price, less is consumed. So by raising the minimum wage, you will put more people out of work. And it's only 3% of our wage and salary workers who get the minimum wage, but the vast majority of them are 25 or younger. And so a minimum wage hike in this state would go after the very young who we want in school anyway. How'd I do, Dan?
That's the corporate response given by the princess of the Chamber of Commerce. So that's what I would expect. Look at the hottest economies in the country. The hottest economies in the United States of America. They're at $15 an hour. And by reaching down and breaking that generational poverty and giving people actually
giving people an actual
opportunity to live, do you know how much $7.24 an hour is? More than 50% of the people making minimum wage, that's their total income. That's $1,124 a month. Give me a break. Who can live on that?
So I'm always trying to be in the political center, taking the best ideas from the left and right. So your ideas, you want to help people that need more. I'll join you in the political center, and let's get them trained so that they can earn a wage that the market pays that's higher than a forced wage. It's all about training, Jim.
Why
not about
$7.24? Why not $2 an hour?
Granted, I get that. So what the research would show is that over time, a minimum wage is okay, and it should be raised over time with the price level. But big jumps can be very disruptive. So going from $7.25 to $15, ooh.
It can be disruptive to the lives of our poorest citizens that, by the way, we're saying no help on health care.
Dan's just smiling.
You know, this is just a fundamental difference in a world view.
Well,
to take that small percentage of people and give them a shot. And you know what? If I got to pay an extra 10, 20 cents for a Big Mac, bring it on. So the people on the other side of that counter can actually pay for their own food.
Okay, you've seen, Jim, you have seen, and just to witness what the research says, you have seen a move towards automation in our society on every scale, right? Mm-hmm. Everything is moving away from human capital and moving towards
automation. Latest example, McDonald's, big time.
Right? So you've seen that, right? If you decrease the cost of innovation by increasing the cost of labor, the offset, the trade, I think we've probably lost a million people here, but the problem is you increase the incentive for employers to chase increased automation, and that impacts human capital in a disruptive nature, and you will create more of the non-working class poor.
Did you like, Jim, how Dan referenced we lost a million people? We have over a million listeners to this program.
Unbelievable.
It's something.
It's at least a million, and when Jim gets revved up, I'm sure the needle hits 1.2.
Dan, let's jump to a veto override session. We've talked about it. You've been saying that you have the votes. The timing is getting critical. Give our listeners an update.
Okay, so everyone needs to keep in mind that the deadline is next Thursday, right? So a week from this Thursday is the deadline, and what everyone
so there
needs
is
to,
a in the books a law of how long you have to do an override.
That's right, okay? And so the 21st. Okay, so everybody keep your mind on the 21st. That's our deadline. That's when everybody has to actually report their vote on whether or not they're in favor of the veto override or not, mm-hmm. And that veto override poll being made public at that point then puts everything in the hot seat. Let me tell you why this is interesting. The 23rd is the Republican State Convention. And because the Republican State Convention is on the 23rd, the biggest problem you have in that scenario is the governor is up for election.
Yeah.
And he does not want to look.
And his greatest challenge in the whole campaign, Jim may not agree with it, but is an internal challenge from Jonathan Johnson at the convention.
That's absolutely right. And so he doesn't want to give any momentum by appearing to be, you know, weakened by the veto override. And as a result, there are some negotiations going on. I'm not sure what the fruit of those negotiations will be, but they're there.
Yeah. Jim, you hearing anything different?
Well, let me just say what a bunch of bull this whole veto override stuff is. Yeah. I mean, governors have to pull out one or two bills just to show they're macho governors. So we go through this. Did he veto that horrible Rocky Mountain Power, complete cave in to the corporate lobbyist of Rocky Mountain Power that will destroy rooftop solar? No. Did he veto the $53 million cockamamie Portland Oakland port deal? No. Did he veto the water project from St. George? No. Did he veto anything serious at all? No. He didn't. He picked up some cooking school deal and some other stuff, and that's his mighty leadership, and he can't even get that done. And the legislators are all flitting around like, that's our budget. Don't you dare touch it. It's all trumped up. Who cares? It's all politics, and it's too bad the governor didn't take this whole mantle of keeping an eye on the budget seriously.
Yeah. Wow. Hey, one other election thing, and talk about a million listeners. They all go to sleep when we talk about this, so let's not spend a ton of time on it. But Senate Bill 54, we've got a ruling from the judge that candidates, not the party, choose how to access the ballot. I'm really happy to see clarity there.
It's a no-brainer. The law is written that way. There were some within the majority party, unfortunately it's my own, who cannot read the law, and as a result, they came up with this additional thing. The funny thing, I don't know about funny, the last-ditch thing that they've got to, quote, throw out Senate Bill 54 is to start expelling members and saying, hey, if you aren't going to go through our convention
process.
Boy,
that'll go over well.
This is the opposite way to run a party. And it is sadly, and I'm just going to step outside of my own party and be a little bit critical of ourselves. I think it's valuable. But I think if you look at our party and look at the direction that the leadership is trying to take it, it shows that we are in trouble because we are trying to make the nation or the universe of the party smaller and not bigger, which tends to not be a good thing for any organization,
yeah.
Number one. Two, it does said for, I think you'll see some innovation or some change or disruption in leadership because I think there's enough people who
You're
are looking at
this. You're
talking
in the Republican
saying,
Central
yeah, in
Committee.
In the Republican Central Committee. Mm-hmm. Because I think there's enough people that are saying this is ridiculous.
With a term like Central Committee, expelling, you know, would go
Star
right
panel,
with it.
Star panel, right? Yeah.
Jim, I was interested to see that in the Love Owens race that, you know, we're looking at all this money that Owens had raised. And all of a sudden, all that Mia Love has to do is flip a switch and she's back in there. And if you look at the most recent data, she's got over $1 million in available funds and Owens is somewhat short of that.
Well, it's because...
Come up with something here.
It's the way that Washington works. It's a despicable, horrible system that takes every single congressperson out of the Capitol to the shabby little offices that are a block away where they meet with staffers who give them lists of people, almost many of them people who have special interest, and where they beg them for money. And that's what happens. It happens every day, sometimes 2 or 3 hours a day, season in, season off, all year round. For both years, they start making money. When are we going to say we demand a system that doesn't require this kind of begging and this kind of attention toward money and let Congress people focus on what the issues are instead of this groveling, calling for money, having a breakfast or a lunch or a dinner every single day? It's corrupt to the core.
It reminds you, I don't disagree with what you've said, Jim.
Me neither.
It does remind you that it'll be an interesting race because it's going to be competitive.
Yeah.
From both sides. Dan, I just also want to ask you, Senator Mike Lee has made comments that he's interested in seeking a Senate leadership spot. And, you know, he's not been back there too long. It's short of 6 years. So any comments there?
I think that the more you see Senator Lee, you know, kind of he's percolating to the top of the Senate. I think that's in national attention and national news. He's percolating to the top of the Senate. It doesn't surprise me that leadership is something that's kind of on the horizon for him.
Yeah. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm joined by Representative Dan McKay and Senator Jim DeBacchus. Let's go down south, Dixie State. Think of the rebels. Think of the Confederate imagery flag. I don't remember exactly what it was, but we got a new name for the
Trailblazers.
Dixie State Trailblazers.
Mike Lee running for Senate leadership.
I thought that was very cool.
I almost cut him out.
Okay, all I need to say about that is Orrin Hatch is not supporting him.
Wow.
Orrin Hatch said, I'm not going there.
Because
Mike Lee is an idiot.
You know,
and he's kind of covered himself over the last month or two. He is a ideological tumor and the very thing that is causing the Congress to not work at all. He's exactly the problem. He ought to be thrown out. And the fact that he is too radical for Orrin Hatch, who says, you know what, I'm not supporting him for leadership, goes to show just how far this tumor goes.
He is
the problem.
So I have a question for Natalie, because
okay.
He just said...
Are we going back to Dixie State, or is it...
No.
Yeah, go Trailblazers.
I tried.
We weren't going to make it.
I was trying to appeal to our statewide audience.
It's kind of like that choo-choo train trying to get up over the hill, and it just slid backwards. So, but to Jim's point, I'm going to ask you a question.
Sure.
He says it's this ideological far-right position that's causing all the problems. In the center, do you really feel like it's just the right?
Oh, no. I think that both the left and the right are throwing bombs at each other, and those of us in the middle are just stuck here.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, it befuddles me that we as a nation can't figure out how to get along and make progress on things.
But Mike Lee is clearly a part of that extreme right.
The shutting down of the government, the, you know, the changing of our credit worthiness by Standard & Poor's, the failure to appoint people that are, you know, nominated by the President of the United States. These are all problems to me. I'm one of those. This is why I could never do this, but I'm one of those that would go back there and try and work with the president. Cool. Maybe that's why I'm going to support, Governor Kasich.
Kooky talk. So I'll say this, and the reason I think this is somewhat funny is Jim always likes to say it's Mike Lee's problem as the far right, and I think it's actually, I think they both share some culpability. But I will say this, it doesn't surprise me. Orrin likes to be the brightest star in the sky. So the idea that someone else from Utah may share a little bit of that glimmer, that's not Orrin's style.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I think if it becomes a legitimate leadership contest, I think Orrin will back Mike, but I don't, you know, it's a confidential vote, so it's not like you're going to find out how that turned out anyways.
Yeah, but it, you know, there's a history.
But Orrin's always trying to smack Mike Lee down.
Yeah.
Always.
There's always a history.
Because he's an idiot.
Orrin, you're right. I agree.
No,
at times,
Mike
Hatch is
somebody
very dumb.
Needs to smack Mike Lee down. He's an embarrassment, a humiliation to the state, and this redo over the last year or two.
But Orrin Hatch's inability to fight for Utah and elevate somebody else in Utah leadership, the next generation to prop them up, his inability, he said this is his last term. He says, this is my last term, I'm done. His inability to help turn over and make Mike Lee in a leadership position for Utah is bad for Utah. And when is Utah going to say, Orrin, stop doing things that are just about you?
Hey, we need to go to gripes, but real quickly, comments on Paul Ryan's announcement. I thought that was so interesting that we got to a point in this country where a sitting speaker has to come out and say, I will not accept this a nomination if it were given to me because it's too disruptive to what we're trying to do in the House. It just shows how messed up everything is.
Mitt Romney's master plan, which was working, which was to tell everybody, state by state, vote for the Trump disruptor. It worked in Utah. They voted for Cruz. It worked in Wisconsin. He was starting to collapse. But now, Paul Ryan is the only person who could have marched into that hall, not having run, and taken the mantle. He's out. It means Trump is going to walk away as the nominee. There is no other path.
I totally disagree. Now, look, Ted Cruz, I'm a Ted Cruz supporter. Yeah, of course, Jim's not surprised. But I will say that Paul Ryan's I'm not running and standing in front of the flags and making a big deal out of I'm not running just feeds into the diatribe even more.
Interesting.
He will be the reluctant candidate, and I am predicting the next U.S. president.
Dan, you are saying, woo! Dan, you are saying that you never get to go with gripes first and you're not a griper. So are you ready for your gripe today?
200 West is driving me absolutely crazy in Salt Lake City.
200 West, Salt Lake City.
The what are those, bike lanes they're calling them? They're ridiculous. We have absolutely destroyed, which was a good north-south traveling lane with these bike lanes that have just gotten so expansive.
And you're a cycler.
And I'm a cycler,
okay.
But those things are ridiculous.
Okay. Okay. Jim?
Starting to sound like Hughes over there, isn't he? St. George's newspaper, The Spectrum, Sunday, a terrific editorial talking about the Lake Powell pipeline. The legislature 2 years ago opened this mysterious fund to collect money, through $5 million. Then they threw an additional $35 million, but nobody knows what it's for. They refuse to say it's for this St. George pipeline, but we all know that. Take a look, read that. The pipeline to nowhere.
Oh, I see, Dan, what you're saying about following Jim on the gripes. You have yeah. to, like, elevate your voice and get excited. I can't do it. I'm just going to be myself. Utah Federation of Republican Women hosted a debate. It was a gubernatorial debate. Jonathan Johnson, Governor Herbert. Nobody heard boo about it. And it says something to me. My gripe is that we have a gubernatorial election going on. It's the top elected official in our state, the CEO of our state, and nobody's paying attention, and there's no big marketplace of ideas. There's important issues in our state, and we're not engaging.
The governor had it at 7 a.m. in the morning. Nobody pays attention at 7 a.m.
And why did the governor use some of the money he throws on all these little conferences at taxpayers' expense to advertise that?
You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. Natalie Gochner, I'm joined by Dan McKay and Jim Tabakas. The program has been produced by Roger McDonough. Thanks for listening.